Hey everybody, welcome to Media Review Pod. My name is Richard Santiago, bringing you another special episode commemorating the 20th anniversary of the Lord of the Rings movie trilogy. Can you guys believe that? Today is the last day of 2023, and I was thinking, look, what better way to ringing the new year than to talk about how Middle-earth was brought to life? Look, these guys used state-of-the-art visual effects, as well as tried-and-true, good old-fashioned visual effects techniques that were perfected for decades, and they were able to exploit these techniques with great success in the making of these movies. In this episode, I spoke to visual effects supervisor Ari Levinson. Now, he's the founder of Leonid Studios, which is a commercial production company that specializes in visual effects and motion graphics. Ari and I worked together over a decade ago when we were both younglings, and Ari was gracious enough to dedicate some of his precious time to talk with me and basically geek out about these movies and their impact on the industry. Now, a little side note, our conversation ran a little bit long, so I had to kind of split it up into two episodes. This is part one, and part two will be clearly labeled as such. So without further ado, please enjoy part one of my conversation with Ari Levinson. People of not Middle Earth, please welcome Ari Levinson. Welcome to the pod.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me.
Oh, this is great to finally meet again after all these years. It's been over 10 years probably, right?
It has been a while. It has.
Well, but it's...
I remember some of those shots from your thesis film. We did some stuff that'll be relevant to this conversation. We did some set extensions. We did some environment replacements. We put some big mountains in the background where there weren't
any.
Yeah,
well, here's the thing. When I was doing the thesis, I tried to think, all right, what is the most economic way or just not only money-wise, but visually of making this work? And I remember when we first talked about one of those scenes, not the set extension scenes, but one of the ones that was going to be a transition from one place to another, yep. I was thinking about it the cheap way, just cheating it with a camera trick or whatever. And then you were the one who came up with the idea of, what about if we just do it without doing that, and it'll feel a lot better. And I was thinking, how the hell are we gonna do that? Are we just going to build a double set or whatever? And then you just opened my mind to what was possible with visual effects, and it was awesome.
Yeah, that was an interesting... I remember the shot you're talking about. It's a fairly straightforward visual effect, except for the morph. This character is walking through a door, and when he comes out the other side, it's actually a different take of him. Mm-hmm. So we had to do a... pretty jerry-rigged morph from one shot to the next with your main character close in frame. That was an experiment for me a little bit.
Yeah, and we did it without motion control, which is...
That's right. I was confident that was going to work because it was... I was confident at least that the motion control wouldn't help, because the main thing that had to line up is the actor, and you can't motion control the actor.
Right.
So much as sometimes we in the visual effects profession wish that we could.
Okay. All right, man. Well, it's been 20 years since the release of The Fellowship of the Ring, and it still amazes me how well these films hold up. And it's one of the reasons why I'm doing this. I treasure this trilogy. I think it came at the right time in my life, where I was able to not only appreciate the story, but everything that was involved in making the movie. I always talk about these films, and I always look for an excuse to talk about these movies. And I just thought, what better moment to talk about than commemorating the 20th anniversary? And so here we are.
Absolutely.
So why was it that you agreed to do this this episode?
Well, so Lord of the Rings, I don't think it was among the films that made me think like, wow, visual effects is a profession mm-hmm. that I could be interested in. I think it hit me a little late for that, right? I was already in high school and already kind of experimenting with visual effects at that time.
Right.
But what it, the thing about Lord of the Rings is that it isn't just the movie. It's also all of the special features on the DVD for those of you that have watched them, right? There is infinite hours of commentary, of behind the scenes, of featurettes showing Weta Digital at work. So what it really was for me was, so it's two things. One is that it was this like college level crash course in how to do visual effects at the very highest level before I, you know, had any real exposure to that. You know, like, I mean, like, you know, a tenth of that, right? Like all the stuff you could find about Star Wars, obviously, was, you know, a different era mm-hmm. of visual effects. And this is, you know, up to the minute cutting edge visual effects that they went into incredible detail about how to, how they achieved all of this stuff. So that's one thing. And then the other component of it is that when I talk to my clients about visual effects, I always tell them that the two things, that the best visual effects are like a good magic trick, that you achieve really seamless, amazing visual effects, not with one approach, but with multiple approaches combined.
Right.
And number two, the best and cheapest visual effects are the ones where you do half of the work in pre-production. And there is no better movie on either of those scores than Lord of the Rings. That it is a just virtuoso approach to how to do visual effects right. And it the movie and the behind the scenes taught me so much about how to do visual effects.
Mm-hmm.
And including, you know, they get into the nitty gritty about like the way that they created the flame simulations on the Balrog. The, you know, they get into technical details in the behind the scenes about using sprites. We can talk about this more later, but the idea is that they used live action flame elements, which they then fed to a particle system, which would drive these live action elements, you know, thousands of copies of them mm-hmm. to create the flames in the Balrog. That stuff, which just a few years later, 3-4 years later, when that technology became available to, you know, your average, you know, independent professional, that I was sort of experimenting with, and I would see that these tools were available, and I would remember that stuff and go, that's how they did it. That's how you can use this tool. And so I, like, it was this teacher for me about how to do visual effects.
Yeah. Yeah. Those special features, are a film school within themselves. But here's the thing about the Lord of the Rings. And, I also think that the first Matrix has a little bit of this, and it's that they were going against the current. They had so little money to work with. The Lord of the Rings, Weta was just a new studio who, you know, they had some stuff, but it wasn't industrial adding magic or anything like that.
No, I think they were basically overloaded with the 500 visual effects shots that they had on Fellowship.
Right.
Yeah, my understanding is that they were founded for Peter Jackson's previous film, Heavenly Creatures, where they did, you know, a handful of shots.
Yeah.
And so then they took on Fellowship with, you know, 500, which was a lot at the time mm-hmm. For any movie. And so they grew into it over the course of the trilogy.
Yeah. It's almost like lightning in a bottle type of situation where all the things just line up perfectly, and they created this trilogy, which I think is awesome. Yeah. All right, so we're going to talk about the films and all their VFX stuff. But first, before we do any of that, I just want to talk a little bit about your career and about you.
If you must.
Yeah, well, I always like to introduce the audience to my guests. So where were you born and raised?
I was born in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
All right.
And I spent the first 18 years of my life right there before coming out to LA for film school.
Okay. Awesome. And what film school did you go to?
Oh, well, I went to USC, and you know that.
Yeah, but, you know, people in the audience might not know that.
I know.
All right. So you did your undergrad there?
I did, yes.
Okay.
Although it was very funny because by the end of it, I guess this is how we met. By the end of my time at USC, I was taking more grad classes than undergrad classes because there's a dirty little secret about the USC film school. I don't know if I should be saying this on air,
but
the graduate school and the undergraduate school are the exact same school. They're the same classes. They literally have all the classes are identified by numbers. And so the numbers are different between the undergrad and the grad classes. But the handouts, the classwork for them will have both numbers on it. They literally give the same classwork to the undergrad and grad equivalents for the same classes. And because there was, not enough grad students for certain departments, the grad professors kind of came recruiting for undergrads, and I volunteered in a heartbeat because I was like, okay, this is, this is an opportunity to meet more people. I think the graduate school is maybe a little more professional. Mm-hmm. And so it actually was a really fantastic opportunity for me because my TAs, who are of course grad students, had already noticed the visual effects work that I was doing on my own student films. Mm-hmm. And then they started employing me to do visual effects on their thesis films, which was really kind of the first professional visual effects work that I had ever had. And so I think it all started with one of my USC TAs. And then, the wonderful thing about visual effects is it's its own advertising. So, once a couple of guys had done it, then, it sort of branched outwards and outwards. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you remember where you first saw my visual effects or got the recommendation. I certainly don't.
Let me see. I think one of my producers.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Because
there was a couple of years there where I was like the grad student VFX guy.
Yeah, so it's that was probably it. I mean, I'm sure word got around, and in our production discussions, we had these meetings. We had several meetings, and every time they were asking me, so how are you gonna do this particular scene? And I would explain it and re-explain it, and they would still not get it, and they kept insisting. We need a VFX supervisor who can actually say if this is going to be viable, if we're going to actually be able to do this. And so the producers just I think they started asking or whatever, and they got you. And I'm grateful.
Yeah, that was a good experience.
Yeah. So when was your first interest in film per se? Not just visual effects, but film.
So I don't have a good answer to that.
Okay.
The reason is that I've been interested in film for literally as long as I can remember.
Yeah.
My parents got their first video camera to take baby videos of me. I'm the oldest child in my family. And so this was right about the time that reasonably compact consumer level video cameras were available for not outrageous prices in the mid 80s. And so this big red VHS camcorder was in my house from before I could walk. And so as soon as I was old enough to be able to handle it, I started playing around with it. I started seeing what it could do. It was a fascinating piece of technology. And I started telling little stories with, you know, my Legos. I did some like really early stop motion stuff mm-hmm. with it. And then, you know, in elementary school, this became me founding a little elementary school video audio club where my friends and I would get together and make little short films every, you know, 3 weeks or so.
Yeah.
And that really kind of carried me through all of middle school and high school. And what happened was every so often I would bump up against the limit of the technology I was using at that moment. I would go, okay, I know this is possible, right? I've seen movies. I have a vague understanding of how they work.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to do this, whatever, with the technology that I have. Okay, how do you do that? And I, the first example of that was editing, right? I understood that I wanted to have cuts.
Mm-hmm.
For the first many years of this process, of course, I had no editing equipment. So the only way to make a cut is to stop the camera, point it in a different direction, and start the camera.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as non-linear editing. There's only the editing that you can do in camera. I did try some experiments about like rewinding the camera and re-recording over. Mm-hmm. That was sort of an intermediate step. And that was the point where I was like, okay, this doesn't work. How do you do this right? Which led to me stealing the VCR from my parents' room and hooking it up to the VCR in the living room.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
Using a camera and one VCR to alternately put clips down to read out to tape in the sort of most kludgy manual possible way to do it. But the basic idea of it was right. Now, of course, that looked bad.
Not only that, it took forever.
Yeah, I mean, right. I mean, look, it's still faster than cutting film. So thank God I didn't, you know, I was fortunate in the sense that I didn't grow up in the like 8mm days, right? You know, this is my dad did experiments with 8mm film, which seems way harder.
Yeah.
You got to wait for it to be developed and everything. But I was very fortunate in right about this time was when the very first version of iMovie was released by Apple. This must have been something like 1997 or 8 or 9, something like that. And I didn't have it. I didn't have a computer that could run it, but my friend down the street had a DV iMac, the very first video, you know, consumer computer geared towards video editing, shipping with iMovie. And we took that thing and we made this like 9-minute short film that I thought was the coolest thing ever. It was like a biopic of sorts. And it was extensively edited. For the very first time, I was editing stuff for real. Like we recorded clips, we ingested them digitally. We then put them, you know, in a timeline that would be familiar to anybody who used an NLE. Fun fact, the original version of iMovie had a timeline. but it did not have a scroll bar. It scaled your timeline to the entire size of your movie. So we had voiceover clips where we had a 7-year-old doing voiceover where we were recording it in like little 3-second bits mm-hmm. because she couldn't read off the paper. We'd read the line to her and she'd read it back. Those clips ended up being less than 1 pixel on that final timeline and I remember just the pain of trying to grab them with that hockey puck mouse and move them around. But it worked. The short version is iMovie opened that door to the concept of editing video on a computer, which within a year turned into me learning Premiere. And a year after that, I was learning After Effects. And it all came from like, oh, here's a thing I want to do that I don't know how to do yet. What is the tool that lets me do that? And so it all kind of progressed very naturally into where I am now.
Okay. Are there any movies that you can pinpoint and say, all right, this is kind of the movie that made me want to be a filmmaker?
I definitely remember the movies that made me interested in visual effects.
Okay.
The movies that made me want to be a filmmaker, I can only think are just the movies that I loved through my whole, you know, childhood. You know, the movies with the best stories. I mean, I think golden era, Disney films, Aladdin, The Lion King, and then, you know, I think it really probably depends on what age. Because I really didn't know that I wanted to direct until, you know, until I was like applying to colleges. But I do remember very distinctly the films that made me want to, that made me aware of visual effects and made me interested in visual effects. And that's Star Wars and Jurassic Park. I was happily old enough to see the re-release of the Star Wars
special edition,
special editions, I suppose, in theaters, and you know, my dad got the VHS set for that, and I wore those things out. At that time, we had just gotten a VCR with a jog wheel where you could advance it one frame at a time,
and
I'm pretty sure I went through the entirety of Empire Strikes Back one frame at a time. I can tell, I have a very vivid memory of being like homesick and going frame, 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 and just really kind of pulling apart how they assembled it, really kind of trying to understand it. And of course, Jurassic Park, which to this day, it's mind-blowing to me what they did with the technology that was available at the time. And I think that is just such, it's such a magical story. It's easily in my top 10 to this day. And it's such a, you know, it's such a beautiful story. It's so well told. And the visual effects are such an important part of it that it really felt like, oh, here's a way to be, you know, here's a way to make real magic. So I remember being truly inspired by that, if not getting into the like nitty gritty of it the way I did with Star Wars.
Well, I appreciate you bringing up Jurassic Park, because that is the one movie that I pinpoint as the one that I can say, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to pursue as a career. And for me, it was several reasons. One of it was that I was, and still am, a dinosaur buff. I love dinosaurs. They've always been fascinating to me. And the story that brought them to life, I thought was amazing. And the visual effects, it's the same thing. Later we're gonna name some of the movies that kind of were seminal for us in terms of visual effects. And I'm gonna say right now, Jurassic Park is definitely one of them.
No question. I mean, Jurassic Park on all levels is very nearly a perfect movie. I mean, there's so little to critique about it. The acting is great. The script is just tight and perfect. The concept of it is what every child does when they imagine, you know, it is the perfect make-believe. And then it's executed with this sort of flawless reality to it.
Yeah.
I think it's just such a great example of like everything that you can do with a movie.
And I remember watching that movie for the 25th anniversary,
when they brought it back in theaters.
It was an IMAX.
Oh, it was wonderful.
It was an IMAX type of, and it was amazing. Amazing. All right.
By the way, I just finished setting up my office screening room. A pretty nice screening environment. The first film I watched on it was Jurassic Park.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. I knew that I wanted it to be something special, and it wasn't actually a very hard decision.
Yeah. Love it. All right. So then after school, So you've been working since undergrad.
I have, and in fact, my last semester at USC, I was probably doing more work than I was doing school. What was wonderful is that all of those short films that I'd done for grad students turned into actual work pretty seamlessly. So, you know, one thing really kind of led to another.
And so you work on movies, short films, commercials?
I do, yep. So I've done a lot of feature films and commercials mainly. And then about once a year, somebody ropes me into doing a music video, and then I say, never again. And then the next year I forget and do it again.
Okay, so this is the moment where we shift to a new segment. We're going to talk about VFX and learn what are VFX? Because if you talk to anybody in your family or wherever, if they are not versed in movie lingo, they think VFX is the same thing as special effects. And you say,
sure.
You say visual effects.
No, in fact, I talk to people in the film industry all the time who use those terms interchangeably. And I don't blame them, because for a long time they were interchangeable. It's only relatively recently that that they've come to represent two very distinct departments on a film set.
So what is that distinction, and how do they complement each other?
Special effects largely means practical effects. So we're thinking prosthetic makeup. We're thinking pyrotechnics. We're thinking anything that can be accomplished on set, animatronics. Visual effects is things that you're going to do in post. So the visual effects team would be responsible for green screen composites, CGI characters, set extensions. And oftentimes there's a huge amount of interaction between them. We're going to talk about this a lot on Lord of the Rings. But the best visual effects are ones that are done in concert with special effects, that you can, and today you can even do this and make it look quite good, do visual effects that are nothing but computer generated elements.
Yeah.
That you can say, all right, we're going to just point the camera off there. You know, we're going to do some stuff. You can have entire shots that are fully CGI in an otherwise live action movie. And, you know, that can look fine. But the best visual effects are almost always ones that have a combination of practical and digital elements. And oftentimes those practical elements mean working with the special effects department.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I know that sometimes I see movies and I say, wow, this was incredible. I have probably no idea how they made it, because it looks so convincing. I didn't even know that was a visual effect. That's something that's also amazing. Sometimes you see these special features on DVDs or Blu-rays or whatever, and they start talking about a scene that was full of visual effects, and it's always surprising. And I don't know, I love when I find out that there's a scene where there were visual effects and I didn't even notice.
Of course. And that's a great compliment to those visual effects artists. One thing that we love is when people don't know that we did anything the shot.
And then there are those visual effects where, oh man, even my kids go, all right, that's coded. That's how they say that there's a computer generated image or something like that. They say that it's coded. So, Yeah, why is that? What makes a VFX convincing, and what makes others not so much?
So the best thing you can do with visual effects is use them as little as possible.
Mm.
That is to say, if you can do something practically, do it practically. If you can do but even better, if you can do a part of it practically, do the part practically. Because giving your eye something real to attach onto when there is an additional digital component to it always really helps. So just to use any one of 1,000 possible examples in Lord of the Rings, Gollum is a CGI character. There's no way to avoid that. You can't you can't hide the fact that he's a CGI character. But in order to make sure that Gollum felt real, one thing they did was they shot an enormous number of live action elements of the things that he would interact with when he stepped on the ground. So twigs breaking, a little pebble being kicked. Those things are not computer generated. Sometimes they are, but they also shot a lot of live action elements of that so that when he was contacting the ground, when he was moving around in a scene, there would be real components to that. So even when you have a shot like that, which is 99% digital, you can still add these, you know, real components to it. And I think thinking carefully about those kinds of things is one of the best things you can do to make visual effects convincing. The other thing, I cannot stress this enough, is to spend time in pre-production. The better you plan out your shots, the more you do in previs, the more you know what you're going in to capture, the better your visual effects will look, because you can do that experimentation before you get to set. This is the thing that I think a lot of modern productions don't take enough time to do, is that they throw up a green screen and they say, we'll figure it out in post. It's a cliche, fix it in post.
Yep.
And the truth is, you can fix anything in post, but the best results come when you plan it ahead of time.
Yeah.
So between those two things, really preparing and creating as much of what you're doing in real life as possible, you can get beautiful, seamless visual effects.
All right. Yeah, I can probably attest to the whole planning thing. I didn't do previs for the thesis that you helped me out with. But I remember us planning the whole thing, planning every time we needed to have visual effects. We had to walk it through, and you had to explain to me exactly how you were actually going to make the thing work.
Yep. Yeah, and for more elaborate shots, you do boards, you do 3D pre-visualization, yeah. You can do effects tests. One of the things that really makes Lord of the Rings stand out is that they spent a year in pre-production figuring out some of this stuff.
And that's awesome.
It shows. We can get into the specifics of the things that, like, they developed whole new techniques in the pre-production for that movie. And there is... it almost never happens these days that a movie gets that much time. They actually said it was really kind of an accident that they got that much time in pre-production, because who was financing the movie changed, and that kind of delayed the production, but it gave them more time to, you know, to work these things out. I'm sure that helped on the writing side, and it certainly helped on the effects side, both practical and digital.
All right, I think we're pretty deep into The Lord of the Rings. How about if we jump into our feature segment? Here's a spoiler warning for all of you out there. We will be talking about all three films in the Lord of the Rings trilogy and maybe The Hobbit. So consider this your first and only spoiler warning.
And here's a general warning. If you haven't seen The Lord of the Rings yet, stop. Press pause on this podcast. Go watch it. I don't know what you're doing.
Exactly. Take Ari's advice. All right. So before we go into the movies, I just want to know what your relationship to the story is, because I've talked several times in this podcast about my relationship to The Lord of the Rings. And so people are kind of tired of that. But what brought you to the books and the films? Which came first, or have you read the books?
I have. So actually, when I was young, my dad would read to me and my brother, and we started with C.S. Lewis and very quickly graduated to Lord of the Rings. So he read the entire, he read The Hobbit and then the whole trilogy to us out loud, you know, a chapter or so a night. So that was my initial reaction to it, or an initial exposure to it. Then I remember towards the end of this, we were getting down to, you know, the last third of Return of the King. And I just so desperately needed to know what happened that I just took the book and I read it all. didn't wait. I remember him being a little upset. But I was like, no, it's okay. It's okay. You can still read it. I just needed to know.
All right. So when you actually saw the movies, did you know that they were going to be as seminal for you as they are?
I think so. I'm not sure. But here's what I remember. I remember being in the middle of the movie in the theater for the first time when they're getting to Lothlorien to go see Galadriel. And this is right about the time that a normal length movie would be ending. And I remember just kind of like sinking into my seat with this sense of incredible satisfaction and being like, I knew enough about story structure to be like, we're nowhere near the end right now. Like we're just getting moving here. And being like, yes, let's go on this journey. And of course I was already a fan of the stories going in. So I knew, you know, like I had some sense of, you know, where this story was going to begin and end. That's my main memory from my very first viewing of the film. I think it probably just kind of took hold of me at that point and never really let go.
It's amazing. I think for me and also for my kids, I think that type of feeling that this story is not yet ending where it's supposed to be ending is just a great feeling, because when you are enjoying that journey that the movie is taking you on, you don't want it to end.
No.
So I remember for me, it was just figuring out where they are actually going to stop the story. Are they going to stop where the book stops, or are they going to stop a little bit after? And then for my kids, when they first saw the movie, they weren't used to watching 3-hour long movies.
Sure. So two questions. One is, how old were they when you first showed it to them?
Yeah. So my eldest was 9 and my youngest was 7.
And was this on DVD?
It wasn't in the theater, but it was here in my house. I have a Dolby Atmos sound
nice.
Setting. So
good.
I have a pretty big TV, and I had read The Hobbit to them before showing them the movies. And here's what's so awesome about this thing of having kids is that you read them the story, right? And they ask questions while you read and you explain. And I'm the one who, when I read, I always act out my characters. Obviously, I did Gollum the way Gollum is supposed to talk. You know, I did all my pluses and, you know, all that stuff.
Right. You were doing an Andy Serkis impression.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So when they saw the movie and they noticed that Bilbo was in the story and the Mithril chainmail was in the movie, and that Sting, the dagger, was in the movie. They couldn't believe that all of this tied together. It was just amazing to them that this story that took place 60 years or so after The Hobbit would still be resonating at that moment, and that characters that they had known from this other novel were actually showing up in this one, that Elrond was there, Gandalf. They didn't even know that Gandalf was going to show up. And it's just because they looked at me and they say, wow, Sting is there and Bilbo. And so it was just it for me, just watching it with them was just a totally different experience than watching it on my own.
Yeah, that's wonderful.